Welcome to Oklahoma Voices. I'm Jacob McClelland. Oklahoma Watch hosted a forum on April the 16th at the Capitol Hill United Methodist Church Gymnasium to discuss poverty issues with South Oklahoma City leaders and community members. The Oklahoma Watch Out Forum was part of a larger project called Talk to Us, in which University of Oklahoma journalism students and reporters from Oklahoma Watch talked to people in South Oklahoma City, Northeast Oklahoma City, and a section of West Oklahoma City about the daily challenges they face. Those conversations were videotaped and then played for civic and community leaders, whose responses were also recorded. All the videos can be found at talkwithus.net. Oklahoma Watch Executive Editor David Fritzy led the panel discussion with Oklahoma City Councilwoman Meg Sawyer, Oklahoma City Public Schools Board Member Gloria Torres, and Attorney Michael Brooks Jimenez. Fritzy started by asking School Board Member Torres about some of her biggest hopes for low-income, struggling neighborhoods in Oklahoma City.
I think one of the biggest hopes for South Oklahoma City is that we continue to grow and progress as we've started to do at this time. As you know, we currently have a very diverse population in South Oklahoma City, but it's very much growing. It's just bursting at the seams. And so I'd really like for us to continue to be able to keep up with the growth that we see here in South Oklahoma City. We have more children than we have space for in most of our buildings. And we have, as a city that has really come around to support schools through Kids for Maps for Kids, I would like for us to continue to see that support on behalf of the city and all of those involved in supporting our schools and providing those resources to every single school, to every single student.
Okay. Mr. Brooks Jimenez, same question.
Well, I think that as time goes on, I think sometimes the faces of South Oklahoma City have begun to change, and so there's been a greater influx of Latinos moving to the South Side, and so a lot of these neighborhoods, so that there can be dialogue and that there could be greater communication, so that people can understand each other culturally, so that they can be better neighbors. And in my experience, going around to some of these neighborhoods and talking to people about their concerns, it's one of those things that they appreciate each other, but they don't always understand each other. And so to be able to create greater dialogues in neighborhoods, to be able to build greater unity.
And Councilwoman Sawyer.
So David, I think my words would be safe and secure, probably. Prosperity, access, education, and really access to excellent education. I'm going to say that I think education is probably the key to a lot of the issues that we're going to talk about today. And so the city partnering with the Oklahoma City Public Schools District, I think, is going to be critical to seeing these neighborhoods blossom the way we hope they would.
Right. Very important. All of these suggestions are, of course, complex issues. But now, when we did our interviews, a certain question would come up, it seemed like time and time again, not only in South Oklahoma City, but elsewhere. Tremendous investment in downtown Oklahoma City. And now we have the 20th anniversary of the bombing. People looked at that as kind of a turning point, but really it started with the MAPS tax and then pushed forward. But now they look at neighborhoods south, northeast, and say, what about investment in those neighborhoods? So you're on the city council.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some sense that there's any imbalance, or that other needs need to be addressed, or what are your thoughts when someone says that?
Well, I have a lot, but let me start maybe with the simplest analogy, and this isn't a completely original one for me. I think our former planning director, Russell Klaus, was the one that tended to use the analogy of a human body as a city, and that your downtown is your heartbeat, and without a healthy heart, the rest of your appendages aren't working very well, including your brain. And so in 1993, when we embarked on the original MAPS project, Oklahoma City was very close, if not almost dead, on the table. We had a serious problem that needed to be addressed. And so the original MAPS projects really were focused on downtown, our river, which I think, as we look to the future, the river may be the greatest bridge between North and South that we had in all of those projects. But a lot of attention was focused on downtown Oklahoma City to get blood pumping again, to create a city that our kids and our grandkids would like to work and stay in. as those things have evolved, I mean, the next MAPS project was MAPS for Kids that invested in every single school across the entire district and across the entirety of Oklahoma City, including the 24 districts that are that reside within the city of Oklahoma City but are separate districts unto themselves. So that portion of MAPS has been spread all over the community. And, you know, we see some issues with South Oklahoma City. The community, as Gloria said, is growing so fast. We need to address capacity, but work was done in every one of the schools. MAPS 3, I see the thread running through MAPS 3 as more of a health issue than other things. And there are projects, again, scattered around the city, sidewalks and trails, senior wellness centers, the second of which will break ground on for within the next couple of months, and it's located on the campus of Capitol Hill High School. So there, I think we can point to a number of things that are much more inclusive than just the focus on downtown.
Ms. Torres, you mentioned overcrowded schools. Mm-hmm. We've heard from different residents and leaders here about the overcrowding and the sense that something needs to be done. So let me ask you, is anything being done or on the part of the board to address that issue? And same question about imbalance. Is there a sense that there's an imbalance in terms of dealing with school needs here versus other parts of the city?
Well, it's difficult to manage sometimes the immediate issue of the overcrowding. When the population has grown, we can't just pick up certain sections of buildings in areas of the city that haven't grown or that the population has decreased. We can't just take a section of that schoolhouse and move it over into a new community to fit that need. So as the population has grown so quickly over here, we've not been able to keep up with the capital improvements that need to go with that. And so as we start looking into future bonding and that sort, we're going to be looking at where do we need to put more buildings in. We're also looking at being creative about what are other ways that we can make sure that we're providing those quality seats for students and providing that quality education for all students throughout our entire district, and making sure that we are taking the resources that we have and focusing those resources on the areas that need those resources focused on. It may be that a certain school in South Oklahoma City is going to require much more staff or much more just other curriculum and things that are going to be needed for the higher population that are going to cost more dollars. We may have to do that in order, we only get so many dollars, and so where are we going to shuffle that from? The students who have the greatest need is what we're going to continue to focus on. The areas that have those greatest needs are where we're going to continue to focus.
Yeah, not to get too much into the weeds on this, but there was news coverage of the surprise when the school board learned about the TIF, the new change in the TIF, and the sense that there would be another loss of money. Where do you think all that might be going?
The reality of it is that, for myself, is that I was not familiar with how the TIF worked, and we just did not have as much information as maybe everyone else had or was coming out. Since then, we've started coming more into dialogue with the city, with the planners, and with those that are talking about the TIF and how that's going to impact our current funding and potential funding, and how that's impacting our district. And so those are discussions that continue, that are ongoing. We have separate subcommittees for our board that are members of the city that meet with us and have those discussions as well. And so we anticipate that we're going to continue to move forward with those in a very positive manner.
Mr. Brooks Jimenez, we had some videos from residents talking about political participation and voter turnout. That's the $64,000 question. I mean, how do you increase voter turnout, registration, participation in South Oklahoma City? The voting percentages are low. They're low nationally, but especially low here in this area.
Well, I think that it's an ongoing process. And so the first thing that you have to do is you have to identify candidates that people will support and that people can get behind. But at the same time, if all you do is you focus on it every 2 years or every election cycle, then I don't think that there will ever really be a huge increase. I think it's one of these things that there has to be sustained efforts to be able to grow the people's engagement and hopefully their registration to vote and their participation. But I mean, I agree with you completely. You know, when you have, you know, state house races where someone wins with, you know, 300, 400 votes, there's something drastically wrong with the process.
Or a city council election where somebody can win with 700 votes. Yes. And I was left with the question at the end of this election cycle of how do voters want us to reach them? And the world is changing, but people don't read newspapers anymore. At least the younger generation doesn't. They don't want you to call them, and they don't have home phones, and you can't call their cell phones.
Right.
They really don't want you to knock on their doors. I know, Michael, you knocked on zillions. I knocked on lots of doors in South Oklahoma City, and very few people came to answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complicated process. Social media is the answer that most people give you right away, but I don't know how many in this room use social media as their news gathering source. And it's a very complicated question as to how the voter today wants to hear from us and how they're willing to learn about what we have to say.
Right. I would guess there's the need partly is a greater realization that those leaders, those decisions affect their lives directly, and sometimes you wonder whether that somehow gets through.
But if people are going to complain about their circumstances, they need to take the responsibility to do something about it.
Well,
and the very first thing that they need to do is they need to register to vote so that they have a voice, and they need to get out.
You know, we talked to a number of actually this wasn't South Oklahoma City, but I think it applies. It was an apartment manager who had many Spanish speakers in her apartment and a number who were undocumented.
Right.
Your firm deals with immigration issues. And in that case, she was very frustrated that people would not report crimes. They were afraid.
Right.
And so my question for you is, if you have immigration issues, what relationship is there for Hispanics who may be undocumented or concerned about their status and the rest of this community? And
right.
How does that affect the community as a whole?
Well, I think there has to be a balance. But one of the things that I think the Oklahoma City Police Department, one of the things that they've been particularly successful at is letting people know that if they're the victim of crime, that if they can feel free and empowered to be able to call the police without having to worry about their immigration status. And in fact, there are visas available for people who are victims of violent crime. And as time goes on, people are beginning to discover those things to where actually it works to their interest to be cooperative and helpful in prosecution of violent criminals. And so as a result, I think the approach to community policing on the South Side has been productive. I think that there are other programs that have been less productive. Gang enforcement, for example, lots of times is very rough and very aggressive in how they identify people and how they put them on their database. But I think that there has to be some sort of balance.
Okay. And that still goes back to a comment that Michael made earlier about making sure that we have that communication, those dialogues that go both ways. The lack of information, the lack of understanding creates that lack of trust. When there's no communication, I can't trust if I have no idea what you're saying or doing, and it doesn't make sense with what's going on in my mind. And so I know I don't recall who I was speaking to, but the Oklahoma City Police Department is going as far as wanting to go out of state to recruit Spanish-speaking police officers because they know that there is a need to meet within this community so that they can have that effective communication. Just because somebody speaks a different language does not make that person a bad person. And when we don't have the opportunity to have that communication, those perceptions start to run. And so, without those dialogues, we don't find out what's going on. We don't know that what the resources are around us. Back to the language issue, not being able to reach those resources that the city has available, not being able to reach the resources that the educational system may have available. I know Oklahoma City Public Schools has hired an entire team of communications to be able to communicate with the entire school district. And I mean, that just encompasses social media. It encompasses written communications. It encompasses communicating with members of diverse communities in diverse languages. And so communication is going to go so far in being able to build those relationships so that we can start to build trust. And I know the Oklahoma City Police Department, that's something that they're working on. I know Oklahoma City Public Schools is working on. And I know throughout the city, that's something that we continue to work on.
I'll mention that for those who aren't familiar with South Oklahoma City, is there, many people know of historic Capitol Hill. Been around for decades. You drive through this part of the city and you're just, wow, this is wonderful. And we spent a lot of time really in neighborhoods west of here and south of here. How would you describe this dichotomy? Is there tension? Is there lack of communication? How does that affect, like, Councilwoman, when you're running for office? How do you view that and approach that?
Michael is right. Communication is an effort and an issue when there is tension. I think neighborhoods are turning over, and the face of people that have lived in these neighborhoods for 50 and 60 years is not the same today. And you know, there are loads of examples that we could use. And I wish my colleague Pete White was sitting next to me. Pete grew up in Capitol Hill and has watched the neighborhood flourish, and he's watched some of the neighborhoods change. But you can see in these, you know, some of the blocks between 30 and 40th Street, McKinley, Binkley, the character of those are changing. And Ward 6, just as a perfect example, is exactly 50-50 Caucasian and Hispanic. It's the smallest of the wards in the city at only 18 square miles, but it is the most geographically diverse. And there is a lack of understanding, there are cultural differences. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't only reside in South Oklahoma City, I want to be clear. Some of my near north neighborhoods, Class and Ten Pen is a good example. We have a large Hispanic population in that area. And there's simple differences in everything from lifestyles, code enforcement, sitting out, you know, having a couch out on the front porch versus using your backyard differently. They're just ways that people socialize differently that cause sometimes some of these tensions as well. And it's neither is the right answer. Mm-hmm. It's understanding each other and learning kind of how we bring this diversity to make us stronger rather than the other way.
Mr. Brooks Jimenez, you ran for office too, so you had to deal with the same question. And you mentioned communication, but how do you improve it?
I think it's already starting to happen. I think when you have a new population, especially a new population that doesn't speak the dominant language in a community, when you have a large influx of people, it's one of these things that it's largely generational. And so I think that the first generation that comes oftentimes doesn't acculturate as much and tends to stay more insular and find people that are from the same place that they're from. The interesting thing is that second generation, they tend to be completely and totally bilingual, completely and totally bicultural, and seem to have all the advantages to being able to make those connections. And so whenever I was out knocking doors, lots of people that I'd bump into, they'd love their neighbor, or they'd really appreciate some of the things that their neighbors, you know. I was talking to registered voters who are, for the most part, you know, not Latino, but they would talk about their neighbors and they'd say, you know, oh, is there anything that, you know, is there a chance that we can ever get things fixed to the point where they can regularize their status? They're some of the best neighbors I've ever had. It's amazing the number of houses whenever you go around these neighborhoods that used to be regular just frame kind of houses with siding or wood siding that all of a sudden they're bricked. You know, they've bricked their houses, they've bricked the exterior, you know, the perimeter of their house, and some of them are beautiful. And so you can tell that lots of these people are craftsmen. That, and not only do they do that at work, but they take it home with them, and they have great pride in being able to be a homeowner, be able to do some of these other things. And so I think that sometimes there are people that are envious of sometimes what they've done with their houses, but it's one of these things that. As I think it, more than anything, it happens with the children, because the children understand each other a lot more than perhaps what the adults do, and they tend to be a lot more flexible and a lot more accepting.
Mm-hmm.
I think you were listening to my conversation with David earlier this afternoon. So we were talking about neighborhoods and, you know, how they transition. I was actually talking about the Lower East Side of Manhattan, but the same kind of a situation where you would have waves of immigrants come in, the first generation struggled, the next generation acculturates, learns to speak the language, begins to get an education, and it changes dramatically. And I think we're at that cusp here in Oklahoma City in general, and I think we're at that cusp here in South Oklahoma City where we're beginning to see that second generation coming along.
Absolutely.
I would like to invite those in the audience to offer any questions they have. Just raise your hand. We have Evie with the mic and Jenny.
Spanish. Primero que todo, quiero dar las gracias por la invitación. Segundo, quisiera... hay un tema sobre el que hablaron que realmente me llama mucho la atención. Yo creo que más allá de tener que esperar a que la situación social presionara... Excuse me.
Es que tengo que traducir y quiero que vaya un poco más despacio.
Disculpa, por supuesto.
First of all, I would like to thank everybody for being here and for inviting us. And I would like to address a topic that really caught my attention. ¿Puede repetir el, desde el principio de lo que le está, el tema que le está llamando la atención?
Sí, gracias. El tema que me llamó mucho la atención sobre lo que están conversando nuestros panelistas es que más allá de, que, de esperar a que la, la situación social generara una transición, me parece que es muy importante desarrollar algo que tenemos todos los seres humanos, que es la curiosidad.
Okay. So before, okay, so thank you for the question. Okay, so they told, they say basically that this transition is going on in Oklahoma, but thank you for not waiting for this transition to happen so long, but thank you for having the curiosity of what is going on right now in your communities.
Is there a question?
No, that was a comment.
Okay. Question here.
Raul Fon with the Latino Community Development Agency. As an educator and as a or agency that really works with families, it seems like we throw things at problems. And so we solve providing a community with a park or with a better school. But the heart of the community, for your analogy, is the family. What are we doing about sensitivity and acculturation, which is maybe the key to hopefully not use the word assimilation, but to work with our families so they could feel part of the community?
Let me, did you direct that at someone in particular?
No, go ahead.
Okay, Gloria, why don't you go ahead?
Let me start with one part of it is within Oklahoma City Public Schools, we have just began to wrap up the final parts of the Great Conversation. The Great Conversation was an opportunity for the community to come in and speak to what our goals were as a city, as a community, to for our school district, for our students. And one of the primary things that we're really looking at is getting to know who is the student, what their strengths are, what their needs are, and who can best inform us of what that is, but their very family, their parents. And so those are the key persons that are going to be helping us with that. Once we have all of that, which we're at that point where we're wrapping that up, making sure that we are now taking the resources that we talked about and directing those resources to where those needs are, identifying the students' needs, hopes, and dreams, and their aspirations for the future, and just making sure that we're dealing with that part of it. And so at the school district, celebrating the child for who the child is, and celebrating that being Latino or being Hispanic is not a negative thing. It is a part of who you are. It's a beautiful part of who you are. And we celebrate those things with you and how that can contribute to your success as well. And so one of the greatest things about the Great Conversation was that it was an invitation for the entire city. And there were several members of at different levels of the city that came in and participated in this conversation, including from the city and the business sector and just everywhere else. So we're very much focused on what are the needs of the child and how are we going to meet those needs as a district, but not by ourselves, but as that partnership with the business and the city and government institutions as well.
So the child is a way into the family to
Correct.
Help the family.
I think, Dr. Font, I might add, and congratulations, by the way, on your new position. We're excited to work with you. I think economic prosperity is another one of those keys, being sure that we're creating a city that's full of job opportunities for folks to be able to provide for their families. I mean, that sort of is the key fundamental, and that is something that we're working on, you know, every day to create a more diverse economy, to create a strong economy, and to create job opportunities for folks around the city.
Other question?
Hi, Meg. I talked to you briefly as before we walked in. Am I supposed to? I'm Paul Bagley. I happen to have a contract with the city for their large art installations for the next year throughout the city. But one thing that I've noticed on South Oklahoma City is this trend where Section 8 housing has become densified. It's really strange, and I'm not sure what's happening, but the term that's coming up are deadbeat landlords. People buy these homes for cheap because the old people that lived in them die. They don't spend a dime on upkeep, and suddenly they're just all cluttered around a single area, and there are limits with the action committee. Like, there's a rank and file where things get done, where you can complain about code enforcement, but somehow I don't know if there's a push to go ahead and get laws on the books to where these people get fined until these houses are back to code. I think there was something about that in the legislature this year.
Well, Paul, I think you know that the city tried to address vacant and abandoned buildings. We are very aware of the damage that vacant and abandoned properties due to surrounding neighborhoods and due to the housing values of everybody around them. And we actually crafted an ordinance that would allow us to try to capture the cost of services. These vacant and abandoned houses are the ones that are getting more calls from animal welfare. They're getting more calls from the fire department, more calls from the police department, more calls from the action line. And so that all costs all of us money. We also know that those properties, as they run down, are paying less and less taxes, and so they're not paying their full share to support that kind of service activity. So we wrote an ordinance and passed it, and the legislature, in its wisdom, I'm sorry, Michael, I'm glad you're in it, but the legislature decided to create new legislation that would not allow us to keep a registry of vacant and abandoned properties. And so at the city level, I mean, they really, this is another one of those quivers in their own era where they've taken away cities' rights to make decisions about what we need to do. And so we have gone back and are using the existing codes that we have in place to be a lot more aggressive. And we've created a third category. If you watch city council meetings at all on Tuesdays, we look at dilapidated buildings, we look at unsecured structures, and we now have added abandoned properties as part of a category. And once a piece of property gets on that abandoned list, we are able to begin assessing those kinds of fines and recovering values. And those fines, if not paid, will be able to be filed as liens on the property. So getting that information to us and using code enforcement to help police some of this, I think will help. But your city council is vitally aware of the fact that abandoned and vacant property in our city is a very serious problem.
I might mention that was one of the most visibly dramatic things we saw in neighborhoods in Northeast Oklahoma City, too. Many abandoned homes, many, you know, there would be beautiful homes and then blight. And as you may know, it's cheaper for the homeowner to keep the place boarded up than it is to fix it up or rent it out. So I think we have another question here.
If I can stand up. I'm Pete White. I'm the councilman for this area. And I one comment I'd like to make about something that has happened that I think is an indication that the city is aware of some of the things that are going on. The Wellness Center at Capitol Hill High School was originally designed to be a senior wellness center. That was what was on the MAPS ballot. It was always going to be senior. But what we discovered not far into it is the Hispanic community is going to make it multi-generational, whether we do or not. And so that format on that particular wellness center is going to change, and it's going to embrace the family, the cultural aspect of families in the Hispanic community much better than I think it would have had we not had some experience and gone through processes like this to figure that out. I think the city has a great willingness to do that. I know the three of councilmen that are here, all three of us do. And it does boil down to trust. I think there's no question about it. I work with the public schools. I'm trying to make things better in that regard. I work with my neighborhoods. But where you start to find success is when you have trust. And that's very difficult. Years and years of lack of trust. I mean, the innate trust of that people don't lack trust in elected officials is just kind of there. Fox News does everything they can to make that worse all the time. I mean, and that's where a lot of people get their news is from that kind of news. So I think we're all working. I know David does. I know Meg does. I know I do. We're working to try to bring about that trust. And I think only then, once we achieve that, are we going to be able to make real accomplishments. We can talk about little things we're doing, but they're really little things compared to the size of the problem. And we've got to find a way to bring that trust about. And I do this on City Council. I try to say everything about five times. So I've done it here today, here tonight too. I do think that's important. I think it's important to encourage that. And as community leaders and people just in the community, I think we've got to find a way to build that. And I think one of the ways you do it is by associating with one another, by coming to meetings like this, by talking to each other, by getting to know other people. I can't expect you to trust me if you don't know me. So I'm encouraged by this meeting tonight. This is a big deal for me. 25th Street is a big deal for me. All of Capitol Hill. I've always said that Capitol Hill is much larger than 25th Street. When I was a kid growing up, if you lived south of the river, you lived in Capitol Hill, period, into wherever you lived. My best example, my favorite example, is Jim White sitting behind me. He's the pastor at Capitol Hill Baptist Church. He moved his church to 134th and Western, and the name of it is not 134th and Western Baptist Church. It's Capitol Hill Baptist Church. And so we are a community, however we got here, we're a community. And we've always been a community. We've always been a diverse community. We've just got to communicate better and build trust with one another. And I think we can accomplish great things in the next few years.
Just briefly turn to schools. Ms. Torres, you straddle two worlds.
I do.
K-12 and community college. And you're looking, I think, a community college center will open up not too long from now. And as you know, President Obama has talked about free community college even, and there's free community college available for many students even in Oklahoma. But, you know, when you look at the graduation rates in Oklahoma City public schools, and I'm talking about graduation rates that don't measure just seniors, the overall graduation rates. There's everyone, I think, says room for improvement. The graduation rate from community college is very low. Your sense of whether the community college is trying to improve that rate or?
Absolutely. This past week, we were in a meeting that's called Complete College. And so we're looking at different trends. What are our students needing? What are the age groups? When are they enrolling? What classes are they needing? Where are they achieving more success, and what can we do to provide that success? We've spent tremendous resources, time, and money in identifying different strategies by which we can ensure that our students are graduating, that we're retaining them from one semester to the next, and we're very happy to say that those numbers are improving. The highest improvement rate for Oklahoma City Community College is within the Hispanic student population. Right now, our enrollment is highest amongst females. And so, you know, those are the numbers that our we're retaining, we're recruiting and retaining, and making sure that they're either achieving their degree or moving on to a second year degree. Yes, there is a lot to do still. We have a lot to grow. One of the primary emphases here at this center is we offer ESL and GED in this community. And so this is opening that gateway for this community to see that they have access to so many who thought that the college is not accessible for them. And so this is their first step. And so we offer the ESL and the GED classes to adult learners who have, for whatever reason, not completed their education, and others excuse me, who are taking the ESL classes. Many of them already have a degree in another country and just want to develop their English language skills. Many of them want to, their employers are giving them the time to better their language skills, so because they are such good employees, they want to be able to keep them and retain them, and so they're helping them develop those skills as well. We have people that drive from El Reno, we have people who drive from Shawnee, other side of Edmond, to come down to take these classes. We, on average, we have a waiting list of about 300 to 400 people to take an ESL class. And so we can only do so many at a time. And, excuse me.
David, could I make a quick comment about that? You talked a little bit earlier about TIF. And I just wanted to point out that there's $3 million of TIF that was allocated to the Oklahoma City Community College campus here on 25th Street.
Okay. Noted. We have a question in the back.
Sorry, I had a question. Mi tema es, aprovechando la curiosidad de la naturaleza del ser humano, ¿qué programas existen en esta zona de Oklahoma a la cual se pueda acceder en donde haya intercambios entre las culturas y se promueva la integración y la unión? Gracias.
Okay, so what are some of the programs that this community has so we can integrate the cultures and to learn more about this culture? What are some of the efforts and what are some of the programs that people from, for example, HART can be part of it, so can have like an integration with the community?
One of the things that we do here in Capitol Hill, the Capitol Hill District, we're the historic Capitol Hill District, also known as Calle Dos Cinco. We celebrate the rich history of here, our Capitol Hill District. I grew up here, literally running down 25th Street, going to school at Capitol Hill Middle School at the time. It's in elementary now, but the my neighbors that lived here with me, the other people who lived here, were not of Hispanic descent, and so the diversity within this community has always been there forever, and us being involved in celebrating the history of Capitol Hill while we integrate the new culture that is of the new population that has moved into this area is something that we work to do. We have many activities, many events that will occur throughout the year in this community, not only to highlight what the Hispanic community can contribute to this area, but what the historic Capitol Hill community has contributed to this area. So that's an opportunity for many people to come be involved and learn. Again, we're afraid of those differences when we don't know what those differences are. If we can be involved in those events and those celebrations to where we learn from one another, we'll see how much we actually do have in common. Family is absolutely the heart of every single community, not a specific cultural community, but every single community. Our priority is our family, and we see that when we see some of these celebrations and these events that occur in this community.
And I mean, specifically, here on 25th Street, there's Fiesta de las Americas, mm-hmm. which is a street festival that takes up the entire street. And not only that, but there's a parade. And so I know that my business has been participating in the parade. I know that Oklahoma City Community College, Oklahoma City Public Schools, everybody. And it's great to be, you know, before I think the lineup used to be at Capitol Hill High School. And you'd come all this way, and you'd go through neighborhoods, and there'd be people out on their lawns excited because they, you know, there are not many parades that come through. And so every year to be able to have a parade and to be able to have events, and, you know, for the most part, my practice caters to Latinos, but people from all sorts of backgrounds come up and want to know who you are, what it is that you do. And there have been other festivals that have started as well. And so there's one on 29th Street that I think is facilitated by the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, which is called El Día del Niño, where they shut down a portion of Southwest 29th Street. As busy as that is, as that street is, it's incredible that they can do it, and I'm sure it's with the help of the Oklahoma with the city of Oklahoma City. But you see 3,000-4,000 people, maybe more, down at a street festival, and it's not just Latinos only; it's everybody. And then also right now, I think that they're working at at the old Crossroads Mall, at Plaza Mayor, that they're working toward trying to have the biggest Cinco de Mayo festival in the entire country. And they're bringing people in from Puebla, Mexico, to be able to teach origins and to be able to do all sorts of different things. And so there are lots of different festivals, lots of different opportunities, and South Oklahoma City Chamber of Commerce as well. Lots of intercultural opportunities to be able to learn about each other.
You know, another small spin on that, if I could, because it kind of follows when Pete said the city's doing some small things. Another thing that we've done is provide $60,000 of additional funding for the Neighborhood Alliance. They hired a coordinator who is bilingual.
Yes.
Anna's doing an absolutely fantastic job down here. And I think the opportunity to create neighborhood associations that are vibrant and active will again foster this kind of communication and dialogue so that we begin to learn about each other. I know that one of my youth counselors that lives on Binkley, about 35th and Binkley, is working with Anna to sort of rejuvenate Heronville.
There seems to be a need for those. When we mapped every neighborhood association in our project in the city, there was some very distinctive gaps in South Oklahoma City. So that reach out. And we have a question over here.
I'm Jim White, the son of Pete White. I appreciate the advertisement.
Wait a minute, we have a rule
earlier
here that no more than one member of the White family.
I'm a regent at OCCC, and I'm a retired and retreaded Baptist minister from this area. But I wanted to talk about the issue of integration of individuals in community and so forth. You know, one of the things that happened years ago, I recognize the population increase is a problem in this area. But when the Vietnamese first were invited to come into this part of the country, having come from Vietnam, one of the things that happened was the fact that churches themselves took on themselves, Catholic churches, Baptist churches, others, took upon themselves the idea of helping these families to integrate. They participated, they got them acquainted with the community, this sort of thing. And it seems to me that sometimes we try to throw money at things, and it may be that the simpler answer lies in terms of individuals who care about other people to get involved in those things and participate. We had four families at one time that we were sponsoring at Capitol Hill Baptist. And all four, by the end of a couple of years, were purchasing homes. They were out on their own. They were doing quite well, thank you. And it wasn't just because they were Baptists, praise the Lord, but it was because, you know, that individuals were investing. Another thing that Gloria has mentioned about the school board's investment in students, one of the things that is a problem in the school system is the fact that the PTSA groups are almost non-functional wherever they are. They try, but people do not show up for the meetings, this sort of thing. And it seems to me that somehow we need a handle on that, because that is a real way to involve individuals in that area. We're concerned about that at the college, because so many individuals are not aware of the fact that of the OKC Go program, which Oklahoma City Community has. Every graduate of Oklahoma City Public Schools has a free entree in tuition to Oklahoma City Community College. That's also true of Western Heights. And for 2 years at least, and it goes beyond that sometimes, but it's important to know, but that lack of information, the lack of awareness, the lack of trust, whatever, stands in the way of individuals participating in that. It ought to be a real groundswell of students who choose to go.
So would you have a question for one of these panelists about one of those?
No, I'm just making a filibuster.
Okay.
Goes with the last name, I think.
In the back.
My question is for Councilperson Salyer. And Meg, I know that you were involved early on with the revitalization of Automobile Alley and did a lot of the heavy lifting there. And then also in your ward, we've seen a lot of districts coming back, Midtown, Plaza District, Northwest 23rd, Film Row. And just given your experience and position, I'm wondering, what do you think has to happen for Capitol Hill to become revitalized to the extent that it could join some of these other success stories that we've seen?
Thank you for the question. And I think Capitol Hill is probably the next absolutely right place for that to happen. It's perfectly situated and has lots of the, you know, organic ingredients. It's got great architecture. It's got great history. The way these small commercial revitalization projects have really worked is to follow what I call sort of the roadmap of the National Trust for Historic Preservation. You have to have four elements to make this work. You have to have an organization. You have to have some design work. I mean, that's a smaller part of it, but you have to have organization. You have to have members. You have something called economic restructuring, which, you know, technically if you had a mall, that's kind of how you choose your businesses and how you work on the mix of business. But it has to be a grassroots effort and then can be a public-private partnership. The city has participated with the Capitol Hill Main Street program for a number of years and provided some seed money for that. But I really think it will take an anchor, and I think the anchor is probably OCCC's campus. And in the case of the Plaza District, that anchor was Lyric Theater. And once you had Lyric planted there and you had people, you know, coming in the evenings and you had people spending time there, the other pieces, but it was small local entrepreneurs that began opening little coffee shop, a tiny Guatemalan restaurant, a small art gallery, and they began to create festivals, just like we talked about on Calle Dos Cinco. You bring people into the district and begin to create this sense of excitement. The city did do a streetscape on 25th Street a number of years ago. It probably could use some freshening up, but some of those elements also help. In the Plaza District, when we did the streetscape and put in the historic lighting, that was really, you know, a giant spark. And what you see from that next is, as the commercial district begins to grow, that success begins to spill over into the neighborhoods. And we're seeing it now in Class and Tan Pan is a great example. Gatewood, Linwood, Las Vegas, surrounding that area. Automobile Alley, you know, just burst out of its seams, and you see what's happened in Midtown, you see what Midtown's doing further north. If we can really capitalize on the property owners down here that have a vested interest in seeing this turn around in partnership with the city, and we have a great arrangement right now with the Kim Cooper Hart in our planning department. I think she was at the Capitol Hill board meeting today. And so we already have a partnership in place, but it's going to take the neighborhood to really be committed to seeing it happen.
Mr. Brooks Jimenez, I'd like to ask you, you deal with clients who have problems. So what's your perception of the needs of this area through your clientele?
Well, I think, well, one of the things that I don't think that we've talked about that has been an important change is the institution of DACA, of Dream Act. Basically, it's not the Dream Act, but deferred action for child arrivals, and how that's really brought about a renaissance of recent high school graduates that have been able to move on to college and to be able to organize politically. And so as a result, I think the kids who've been left behind that can't qualify, and really more than anything in the appointments that I'm doing right now, there was another announcement that President Obama made in November, but it's tied up in litigation right now, which is called DAPA, which is deferred action for parental authority. And basically what it would do is it would give the opportunity to people who've been here in the United States for more than 5 years, who have a clean criminal record and have children born here in the United States, the opportunity to get work authorization. Yeah. If that were to ever happen, I think that the strides that would be made in a lot of these communities would be huge. If all of these people all of a sudden were able not only to get work authorization, but were able to get valid Social Security cards, begin paying all of their income taxes and all the additional taxes that they're in, all the additional taxes in addition to the ones that they're already paying, such as property taxes and sales taxes, and then on top of it, if they could get valid driver's licenses, I think it would create an additional level of stability on the south side of Oklahoma City, which would be huge.
We have time for just one or two more questions. One go ahead.
Mr. Brooks Ferranis, the ID system.
Yes, ma'am.
If people had an ID system who are coming into Oklahoma,
right,
where they could have a driver's license, this would lessen crime.
I agree.
And it would encourage them to participate in community actions.
I think that's an excellent point, and also it would reduce the incidence of people driving without insurance, which is also a huge problem. I don't know if anybody's driven by my office in the past 3 weeks, but someone uninsured ran into my sign and knocked the top of my sign off. And so I'm dealing with, and unfortunately that person was uninsured. And so this happens to the best of us, but I agree that I think security-wise, and I think if you were to talk to people from the police department as well as OSBI, if they had a way to be able to confirm people's identity when they pull them over, and a reliable way to be able to do that, I think that would increase public security. I think it would increase the number of people who are driving legally and also the people who have liability insurance. And so I think it's a win-win. I think that there's the other side of that coin is the people that are concerned that you're rewarding negative behavior because they're not here in a documented way. But at this point, if people have been here for 5, 10, 15 years, I think we need to realize the reality of the situation, and we need to move forward to improve our communities. Thank you.
Final question from this gentleman.
My name is Bill Clifford. We lived in Ardmore about 50 years ago, and at that time there was an attempt by the community to bring people together on what we called the Let's Talk meal. And every month, the churches would rotate meals of different cultures in different parts of the community to bring people together around a speaker, followed by a covered dish dinner, which was the responsibility in both cases of the sponsoring church at that time. And I wondered if there might be any thought given to that kind of an approach, given the diversity of churches in Oklahoma City, but especially the strong religious orientation in this part of the city.
Already must be.
I think that would be a wonderful idea. I'm very excited about having this opportunity today. Several of the people that I've spoken to, I don't think that we as South Oklahoma City, citizens of South Oklahoma City, have had the opportunity to have such a platform to be able to discuss issues that concern us, discuss the diversity of the issues that concern us, and as likewise the opportunities and the celebrations that we have here in South Oklahoma City. Usually if you hear the news, if there's something negative, they'll say right away Southwest Oklahoma City. But to say the positive things and the many things that we can celebrate, we don't hear as very often. We have a very diverse community here. We do have the Latino community. We have business community. We have a big religious community, church community. We have quite a diverse population, and yet we don't have that opportunity. We've not seen that opportunity to come to have these dialogues and to have the voices heard of what are things that we can do so that we can learn what's going on with the different cultures and the different segments of our community as well. I do have to say, though, I'm very excited about the South Oklahoma City Chamber's involvement with the revitalization at the crossroads Plaza Mayor. That's very much a cross-cultural partnership there, where it's really helping with the revitalization and the economic development within this area of our city. Without that economic redevelopment in our community, we're not going to increase our tax base. Without that partnership, our voter turnout continues to be low because we don't see what some of the outcomes can be. And I think opportunities such as this to inform members of our community, this is how your vote counts, making sure that we're educated and informing the citizens in this community about what are issues that your voice does have an impact on. This is an opportunity to do that, and I know I want to say thank you for bringing it to our community, because I don't think we've had this before.
Well, thank you. We just do our small part. And I want to recognize again the Gaylord College of Journalism for allowing students to share in this. It was a fantastic experience for them to get out of that wonderful bubble, Norman, and OU, great place, and get into areas and talk to people and get outside of their comfort zone. And we hope will continue. Again, check out talkwithus.net, check out oklahomawatch.org. You'll see everything we do. And thanks for coming.
You've been listening to an Oklahoma Watch panel discussion on poverty in South Oklahoma City. The discussion was recorded on April the 16th at the Capitol Hill United Methodist Church. Oklahoma Watch executive editor David Fritzy served as the moderator. He was joined by Oklahoma City Councilwoman Meg Sawyer, Oklahoma City Public Schools board member Gloria Torres, and attorney Michael Brooks Jimenez. This forum was edited for Time. The complete forum is posted at kgou.org. The views expressed in today's broadcast are not necessarily those of the staff of KGOU or its licensee, the University of Oklahoma. For more information on this and other Oklahoma Voices broadcasts, go to kgou.org. I'm Jacob McClelland. Thanks for listening this week to Oklahoma Voices.